Friday at 11 a.m. here on KDPI 89.3 FM Community Radio for the Red River Valley.
Good morning and welcome to the 4 Cause Show here on KDPI 89.3 FM Ketchum. You can stream us at kdpifm.org or follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And I hope you do. And I want to apologize to any people out there who are expecting to hear the show this morning. It didn't play this morning, and it will play Friday morning as per usual. Same episode, so you won't miss anything from our dear Harry Shearer in New Orleans. My guest today on the For a Cause show is Catherine Guillet. She is the executive director and founder of Nurture. And hi, Catherine.
Hi, thanks so much for having
Welcome
me here today.
Welcome to KDPI. I know you've been in here before. And really exciting news is that in January, Catherine's going to start her own show here on KDPI.
I am so excited. I think I've just become quite at home here in this beautiful station.
I know. It's great. You've been coming in a lot. And it's going to be a great show because it's going to be a sort of a sidebar to Julie Johnson's Our Health Culture show, in which you will talk about nutrition, but specifically your show will be about nutrition for children.
Right, and our audience will be really the parents or caregivers for children, right, and sort of what are the resources out there for providing our children with a healthy lifestyle, yeah, and bringing in voices not only from our valley, but from afar. So
yes,
I'm really excited to share some of my contacts.
Excellent.
And to bring some of these fantastic people that I've gotten to know here in the valley, and
yeah,
I think we'll have a lot of fun.
Yeah, I am sure it will be. And so it will be playing starting in January, about 22nd, I think. It'll play every other Tuesday at noon. Okay. And this is why Catherine is actually here, to talk about her nonprofit organization, Nurture. And she's talked a little bit about it on Our Health Culture before, but we want to talk about the nonprofit aspect of what you do and how Nurture works. So why don't you just give us an explanation of how you formed Nurture, kind of a background on you, Nurture. Okay.
Yeah, and I'm sure there are some listeners out there that have never heard of Nurture.
Yes.
So I'm going to take us back in time. So let's go back to 2008.
Okay.
Okay. We don't have Michelle Obama. In fact, we have not even heard probably of Jamie Oliver.
I don't even want to go back to those days.
I know. And actually, this was the day when you actually had to make a case for why nutrition education was important. It was before Michael Pollan was out there with his voice talking about the importance of the food chain.
Mm-hmm.
It was before we really understood that low-income families are disproportionately affected by mm-hmm. nutritional disease. So my personal situation back in 2008 was I had sort of semi-retired from my career in management consulting, and I was at home with my then small children. So
and home in Chicago.
In Chicago, mm-hmm. yes. And so I had, I think, a toddler and a baby at the time, and I wanted to get out of the house to get involved in the community. So I was volunteering at a local food pantry, and I was actually studying to get my certification in nutritional counseling, and I'm a Spanish speaker by background as well.
Mm.
So, as you can imagine, I love to speak Spanish, mm-hmm. and when people would come in on a weekly or biweekly basis to pick up their groceries or their mm-hmm. food pantry supplements, I would ask them, how are you doing? What's going on in your
mm-hmm.
life? And I started to hear some common themes. So,
And were you asking them as a member of the public, or were you asking them, I mean, how were you approaching people on this level?
Just as a friendly, can I help you in some way?
Okay.
Because I did have, at that time, some background in nutritional education.
Right. Uh-huh.
And I started hearing, I am so tired. I'm trying to work two jobs, but I can barely get through the day.
Right.
And these were folks that had children, or maybe they were even grandparents that were taking care of their children's children.
Yeah.
And some people had lost their jobs because they couldn't get through the day. And
right.
so it was really a message around, I don't have energy.
Mm.
And there I was. Okay, so this is 2008, and I'm passing across the counter the food pantries and thinking to myself, I know it's in these bags. Back in 2008, a lot of the food distribution was processed foods.
Of course.
And so it was kind of junk that we were giving folks, uh-huh. and we're not helping people to get out of the situation that they're in, because
mm-hmm.
they need, that what they need is energy. So it was actually kind of sad, and that's the roots of nurture was to be able to identify this somewhat sad problem that we weren't helping helping people through the organizations of the food pantries in Chicago to get out of their situation. Mm-hmm. And as a side note, I'm a huge fan of the Hunger Coalition.
Oh yeah.
And when I came to the Valley in 2011, I was thrilled to see the care and the thought that is put into the food distributions mm-hmm. here in the Valley. And so that's not at all what I saw here. But this was back in 2008. So there was the problem. Mm-hmm. And then it was a matter of coming up with a solution to help these folks. And what we saw as a major component of the solution was giving folks cooking classes. Because mm-hmm. here's a funny thing. Every once in a while, there would be some whole wheat couscous or some dried beans in the bag. And people would say,
What am I going to do with that? Which is so crazy because in, you know, a huge portion of the world, these are staples.
Absolutely.
And now I believe we're getting closer to having them be staples again in some of our households. Mm-hmm. But yeah, in 2008, people didn't even know how to pronounce quinoa.
I know, yeah. I know. And so they would say, what is this? How do I prepare it? And I was thinking back to my days in graduate school. I put myself through graduate school, and I was on a very limited budget. And my trips to the grocery store were
basically... You were in Austin.
I was in Austin, Texas, yes. Mm-hmm. And gosh, what was the name of the store? Maybe it was Winn-Dixie or something. But I would go, and it was an exercise in restraint, meaning I couldn't afford most of what was in the store. And I learned to avoid certain aisles of the store, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
And I lived on beans, split peas, lentils, whole grains, and fruits and vegetables, whatever
right.
I could afford. So I knew that it was possible. So that was my background story, kind of saying, okay, mm-hmm. if people can learn how to cook, if they can learn what foods are economical, mm-hmm. if they can learn what foods are nutritional and can give them the energy they need, then maybe they can feel better and get out of the situation that they're in.
Mm-hmm.
So once this idea was down on a piece of paper, it was like the universe opened up and started bringing me people that were able to help this mission come to reality. So people like a PhD in nutrition showed up one day mm-hmm. and two registered dietitians and holistic health coaches. And it was just this amazing phenomena in Chicago where these people came together and we said, let's put on cooking classes. And that's my favorite way actually to describe Nurture is that we are an organization that gives nutrition education disguised as a cooking class.
That's great. Yeah. That's totally what you want to do. Yeah.
Because I think a lot of times when people hear the word nutrition, they think that it's going to be, you know, a judgment on things that they love. Maybe they love their cookies or they love their Coke or whatever it is that is their go-to food. And mm-hmm. at Nurture, we made a promise philosophically from the beginning that we would never judge, that we would only be positive and sort of saying, these are things mm-hmm. that you can add. These are ways that you can add to what you're already doing. And maybe over time, those bad foods, which we would never call bad, but those not so good for you mm-hmm. foods will go away. So that's sort of the root.
I'm proud of you, or you know, what I mean to say is, I admire the fact that you are trying to approach this non-judgmentally not call things bad foods, even though that's exactly what they are. It's easy for people who are already there in whatever manner that is, or in whatever industry they're in, who already know, to be arrogant about what they know and look down on those who are just learning or don't know at all. And so it's really good that you're approaching it that manner. And I'm talking about all industries, you know. It could be just a matter of being like a newbie in Ketchum and not feeling like you're a local because you haven't lived here long enough. Well, the fact is, you know, we all have our own experiences. So I remember when I'd been here 12 years and somebody said, oh, you just moved here then. And I
was that
felt
funny.
Like, and my kids were in school, you know, it's really good that you're approaching it that way, because I think the, you know, a big turnoff for people is, you know, to hear that what they're doing is bad and AKA you're stupid.
Right, and what I love about Jamie Oliver is he takes off that chef's coat, which I think becomes this barrier. It's like, I have this chef's coat on, and so therefore I can do something that you can't. And so he takes it off and says, sure, you can cook. Can you go out to a garden and pick a couple things, and let's just make up some stuff and have fun? And if it doesn't work out, what's the worst thing that could happen? Doesn't taste good? Okay. You know, so it's this idea that you can experiment, that you can have fun, that you can make mistakes. And just having the barriers down, I think, is the key to making any progress. And I think when people are defensive, when you're saying you can't have this or don't have, you know, your coffee in the morning or whatever it might be, as soon as the defenses are up, then your opportunities for getting the educational messages through are over. Yeah. So we never started with barriers. We always just said, okay, has anyone ever had millet? Let's try it. Yeah. Has anyone ever had quinoa? Let's see what four dishes we could make in an hour by using a rice cooker.
And what kind of people were coming to these classes?
It was actually mostly Hispanic families, and we had the food pantries recruit them for us. And we wanted to target caregivers. So it was great because they would bring their kids. And in the beginning of the program, we only had free babysitting for the kids. So we were doing our cooking classes with the parents while the kids were in another room. It was usually held in a church that was affiliated with the food pantry. And then over, again, I was saying that the universe provided these fantastic people. One day, this woman showed up on my doorstep in Chicago, and she said, I'm here for 2 years while my husband is at Kellogg Graduate School of Management. I am a children's nutrition education specialist.
Oh, my God.
Please use me as a volunteer for the next 2 years. So I said, great. Instead of having free babysitting, I'm going to put you in charge of the kids' programs. And so she would have the kids in there. And oh, my goodness, there was magic in that room next door to our. I was involved with the adults. But I saw these kids running down the hall, so excited to go to their class. When they were coming out of class, they were so excited to show their parents what they had learned.
Wow.
And then when Nurture started getting a lot of media attention, guess where they went? I mean, the news cameras went right into the
kids'
rooms because they had the beautiful smiling faces. And so that's really where our children's nutrition education programs came from, was this wonderful woman named Juliette Britton, who just showed up and said, you're a grassroots organization. I want to help.
Wow. That's really excellent. And you're right. That is sort of like, you know, the universe dropping her into your situation. For her, it must have been excellent as well. She must have come and said, okay, it's Chicago. I can find something. And then walked into the situation where she was really needed and made good use of that time.
Yes, and we always hope that our volunteers, you know, go on to do great things. She actually went into, she got her registered dietitian degree, and now she has two small children and is doing part-time work actually in Colorado, so I can't wait to go visit her. But she was really the origin then of our school programs, because we were working in food pantries and in social service agencies. And so all of a sudden there was this children's program, and then somebody came up with the idea of, hey, there's a captive audience of children in schools every single day. Mm-hmm. Could we get into the school system and help children there? And the first school that approached us is actually one of the highest need schools in all of Chicago's suburbs.
Really?
It's a school near Highland Park, which is actually a quite affluent area.
Yeah.
But these children, it's like a little pocket of need. About 90% of the kids are on free or reduced school lunch, and most are Spanish speaking. And the school is a recipient of the Fresh Fruit and Veggie Program of the USDA.
Yeah.
And the school wanted to keep that program, so they said, "Why don't you come in and do some great things around the fresh fruits and veggies?" So we did Star Fruits and veggies programs with the kids, where we got them excited about eating and trying the fruits and vegetables, and we did Rainbow Day, and we did all these kinds of fun.
So such great stuff that you were able to do there. Does it feel, now that you've moved to Ketchum and started Nurture here, that you're, are you missing sort of the opportunities that you had there?
No, it's actually the interesting story about us moving here is I had felt kind of like we were in the fast lane, life in the fast lane in Chicago.
Yeah.
And one of the objectives that we had in even moving here in the first place was, and some of the listeners might laugh that know me, was for us to slow down.
Uh-huh. I'm laughing too.
Okay.
The little I know of you, yeah.
So my husband is in finance, you know, he's got a pretty intense job, and you know, I was in management consulting, and then I started an organization, and I was getting my certification in nutritional counseling. So it was kind of like, wow, moving to Ketchum could be an opportunity to slow down. town. And I have to say, I will pat myself on the back. The first year that we were here, I really didn't do much. And what I just did was I volunteered for the Hunger Coalition mm-hmm. for their education workshop series. Mm-hmm. And I did a couple of volunteer stints in the schools, and my kids were in the mm-hmm. community school. So I was in the third and the fifth grade there. And also in moving to the Valley, so we had used slow cookers and rice cookers mm-hmm. as a way to overcome the obstacle of time, because mm-hmm. that's another issue besides money mm-hmm. and why people don't cook. So we had an excess of about $10,000 worth of slow cookers in our Chicago operations for Nurture. Yeah, I know. We couldn't give classes and education fast enough.
Wow.
And Hamilton Beach has been a great supporter of the organization.
That's fantastic.
So I learned all about the Hunger Coalition from afar and what they were doing in terms of their education workshop series and their focus on fresh foods. And so we decided to gift them $10,000 worth of slow cookers. So if you go to the Hunger Coalition, they still have some left, but they've been doing programs for the last 3 years, very similar to Nurture, but I'm not actually doing all of it. So I came and I volunteered for maybe a few classes mm-hmm. to kind of show the staff how to do it. But the beauty of Nurture is that it's not rocket science, mm-hmm. and the idea is that others can do Nurture and it can live on through other organizations. So mm-hmm. I'm really proud to say that the Hunger Coalition is doing a fantastic job with that.
Let's take a quick break and we'll be back in a minute to talk more with Catherine Guiley about her organization, Nurture. And you're listening to the For a Cause show here on KDPI. Thanks for being here and we'll be right back.
For a Cause is partially underwritten by the City of Ketchum, where we believe in belonging to and working towards a vibrant community. Residents and visitors enjoy a lively downtown, cultural events, and an endless array of recreational activities enhanced by bluebird skies, crystal clear rivers, world-class skiing, golf, fishing, hiking, and mountain biking. Details, ketchumidaho.org.
Thank you. ride on slow. But you best come on in my kitchen. Country, but won't email me. But you best come on in my kitchen.
Advocates provide services to victims of domestic violence. For 23 years, the Advocates have supported victims and provided services including shelter, safety planning, support groups, counseling, court advocacy, legal assistance, case management, job and life skills training. For more information or immediate assistance, call 208-788-4191 or 1-888-676-0066 or theadvocatesorg.org. This message brought to you by KDPI Community Radio for the Wood River Valley.
And we're back on the Four Call Show here on KDPI 89.3 FM Ketchum, streaming on KDPIFM.org. This is Dana Dugan, your host. And my guest today is Catherine Guillet. She is the founder and executive director of Nurture. And thanks so much for being here today. She's getting to be a regular here at the station. And if you just tuned in, I was announcing earlier that she will start her own show here on KDPI on Tuesdays at 12. In January, and that it will be specifically about children and nutrition. And so I wanted you to give us a sort of a thumbnail on what Nurture is exactly, because it seems to have morphed a little bit.
Yes, and I was saying before the break that there's other organizations here in the Valley that do a lot of similar type work. I was talking about how the Hunger Coalition has an education workshop series. The Sawtooth Botanic Gardens also has some exciting education programs, ERC, the YMCA. I'm excited about their greenhouse. So as we were thinking about our mission statement here, it seemed to make more sense to have a mission statement that was more about collaboration and integration and support. Because I'm a person that believes very much in efficiency, and so I certainly didn't want to step on anybody's toes.
Right, and you don't need to reinvent the wheel.
Exactly. So it was a fantastic idea that actually came about through our Nurture board members that have a lot of experience in nonprofits, and they said, "Hey, you know, you've been running a surplus when you were back in Chicago. You've been putting away, you know, $20,000 or $30,000 a year, which to our organization, being a grassroots organization, was a lot of money.
Yeah.
And we've actually over that time put away about $100,000, which we call our endowment. And so what that does is that provides about $5,000 a year in income, which directly covers our overhead. So, and what we learned very early on is that donors actually really don't like to support overhead. It's not fun and sexy. It's,
want a project.
Exactly, exactly. So, you know, the website, the accounting, the legal, that kind of stuff was something that we wanted to cover elsewhere so that if we did get donor dollars, we could put them right back into the community. That was part of the decision process, is that we had built up this endowment, which allows us to cover our overhead. And then we said, with the family of donors that we have that give year after year because they believe so strongly in our mission, we can then provide support in mini grants. So I'm not talking about $50,000 grants. I'm talking about maybe $500 grants. But we can provide support in mini grants to other organizations and combine that with the time and talent of our organization and all of the intellectual property that we provide for free that's available on our website and we're happy to train on. And so our new mission, if you don't mind, I will read it,
please.
So that I make sure that I get each word correctly, is that Nurture and envisions communities working in collaborative ways to enhance nutrition and wellness of children and families. Nurture combines volunteer time and talents along with curricula and financial resources to support nutrition and wellness's services. Mm-hmm. So I think the key words really in there are the collaboration and the support.
Yeah, absolutely. And so it's terrific because it's different from, you know, what else is here, and it ties them all together. So it's great. And I think also the way you keep expanding your notion of how you can be a part of this game is to the outreach and doing a radio show, for instance. And these things are really going to help get the word out in more than, you know, more ways. Because a lot of people don't know what's happening behind the scenes.
Exactly. And I think I always have seen myself kind of as a problem solver. Mm-hmm. That comes from my background as a management consultant.
I think that's probably a really good thing to be.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, and sometimes there's not always a straight path between A and B or A and Z. And so you kind of have to reorganize your thoughts and put together new strategies mm-hmm. for moving forward. Mm-hmm. But I like to put the puzzle together. And what we have here in the Wood River Valley in terms of our network of nonprofit organizations, and you know from the show, mm-hmm. it's outstanding. I've never seen anything like it in my life. And the quality of the organizations mm-hmm. and the quality of the people in the organizations mm-hmm. and the programs.
And the volunteers.
We're so lucky. We're so blessed to be in this valley.
Right. That's true. When you talk to children about nutrition, what is the biggest stumbling block for them? Is it the sweets?
Well, I would say that's a big one for sure. I think a lot of kids start out early in life, especially low-income families. I mean, I actually was speaking to a woman who works with a lot of Hispanic clients, mm-hmm. and she's in the dental hygiene industry, and she was telling me that a lot of families will put juice or sugar water in a bottle. And I've seen that actually in Latin American countries. Mm-hmm. And so you see this decay of
really
baby
early
teeth.
On.
And so what that's doing is not only is it's causing tooth decay, but it's also creating a palate which is going to prefer sweet.
Well, as we know, sugar is addicting. So if you stop, people just kind of look at you like you're crazy, but it's as addicting to your brain as cocaine is. And if you stop eating sweets, you find the longer you go, the less you really need them and want them. And your brain doesn't do it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I need a candy bar.
It's amazing, actually, how savvy the food industry is. I was at a talk and hearing about
how... It's not accidental the way they do it.
Exactly. And they have brain... experts. They have neurologists in their organizations that are looking at the parts of the brain that light up, for example, when you're addicted to nicotine. So mm-hmm. it's almost the same kind of thing that tobacco companies were mm-hmm. doing, and now our food companies are doing the same thing. Yeah. Is they're saying, how do
it's
we get
appalling.
People addicted? You know, it's through sugar, it's through mm-hmm. fat, and salt, and the combination of those things. So there's definitely that. It's sort of working with the palate mm-hmm. Of children, but also it's just getting kids to try new things, and that's also related to the palate. Mm-hmm. But I think that actually getting kids out of the home and getting them in a different setting, mm-hmm. whether it's a camp or an after-school program or a program like the Hunger Coalition is doing or the Sawtooth Botanic Gardens mm-hmm. or the ERC, getting them with their peers mm-hmm. and having them then taste foods there, unbelievable.
And then the gardens, the growing of the food itself is, you know, when you take people out of their native lands, they don't necessarily have the gardens and the dirt to work in anymore when they're work. You know, and I'm talking about the people who come here who don't have family here and homes already, or they haven't spent time. So they're living in trailer parks, for instance, and you know, in ways where they are not working with the land. They're living just inside their box. And, you know, they lose that connection to the land. And when you connect, I remember, you know, I started, this is just a personal sidebar here, but I started gardening in my 20s, but I had grown up with massive vegetable gardens. But not until the 20s did I start personally gardening, because I lived in New York. So, I didn't have any land, but I was dating a guy whose family had land. that there was gardens that hadn't been taken care of. So it was all flower gardening, the way I learned to garden. Finally, after I had my first child and we moved out of the city, did I start vegetable gardening. And now it's taken over. So my flower gardening is now, you know, not the most important part of the gardening. It's vegetables and things I can eat and use. So it's an evolution of learning.
And I'm sure your kids are more likely to eat those vegetables that are coming out of your garden.
Totally. Yeah.
It's so exciting to see the wonder on the faces of children when they go pick a zucchini and say, you know, can I just try this? Or a fresh tomato? And it's almost like you could never go back.
Well, yeah, you get the little cherry tomatoes, or as we still call them, baby tomatoes, and you eat them right off the plant, and it's candy.
Yes.
It is candy.
Yes.
It's nature's candy.
Yes, and
they're
I think, and that's a great way to get over that sugar, you know, palate, mm-hmm. is to get kids in the garden and give them a Sun Gold tomato. Mm. I mean, those are, they're as good as candy. Mm-hmm. But you have to understand, if you've been a child that's had, that's eaten their rainbow in the form of Skittles and, you know, Sweet Tarts, it's just going to take a little bit of time, mm-hmm. and patience.
Mm-hmm.
But I think programs like the Hope Garden that we have in, mm-hmm. Haley through the Hunger Coalition, mm-hmm. I think
that's
it's
fabulous.
Fantastic. And back in Chicago with Nurture, we did have a grow your own food program, mm-hmm. that supplemented our cooking classes, because we were, all of our recipes needed to be $1.50 or less per serving. But we wanted to have a very nutritional offering in each of our recipes. Mm-hmm. So it was a challenge. And I, you know, hats off to our food committee, and in particular Julia Goodhouse, who ran it. She's a great home chef, and she would come up with, you know, ways to use whole grains and beans and split peas and lentils and then fruits and vegetables to make super tasty dishes. But what we noticed is that the cost was always driven up, especially if you wanted to get organic fruits and vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the cost driver usually of the dishes, because lentils and split peas and beans, you know, you can get those for pennies an ounce.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to grow your own food was a way that we were able to overcome that obstacle. And actually, Jean Pinsoff Nolan, who was in our valley, mm-hmm. a couple weeks ago, mm-hmm. she would come in and do workshops. And you were talking about how you had been in New York. She worked with a lot of folks that didn't have land.
Yeah.
And so she would give them a pot, and mm-hmm. Here's a tomato trellis, and here's everything else you need, and seeds, and some education on how to, mm-hmm. to grow something right from their balcony or their windowsill,
mm-hmm.
and that's really gratifying. So
yeah.
I'm glad, you know, when we moved here, to see that it was already happening in the form of the Hope Garden.
Yeah. Well, the Hope Garden was a great, you know, a wonderful thing to have happened to downtown Haley, for sure, and to the Hunger Coalition, and, you know, watching it you know, evolve into now this growing garden has been really fun. And of course, the Sawtooth Botanic Garden has been really a leader also in getting people seeing how things grow and what works here. And when it started 20 some odd years ago, I must have moved here right after it opened, because I immediately joined it because I was living in Ketchum and I couldn't garden here because this growing season is too short, and I had a lot of pine trees and stuff. And so I immediately signed on for one of those plots, and all these people would go down with their own plots and grow. And it was really a wonderful community of people trying to grow their own food. And now we don't have to do that as much, because then there was a CSA and then Idaho's Bounty.
Right.
So this has changed the way we eat here.
Yeah, and I love the fact that Harry Weeks down at the Sage School has figured out a way to do it with the greenhouse, but on a huge scale. I mean, kids produce, output is, I mean, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
And I was very proud to bring Jean to see the greenhouse, and mm-hmm. she was really impressed, especially to hear that it was all student-driven.
Oh, it's incredible. The tomatoes that they do, or tomatoes, as we say out west, the tomatoes and the greens and you know, it's a beautiful thing. Dan Freeman, of course, helps facilitate that, and he's a gardener in the valley and a farmer. And it's a great program. I love to see schools involved in these things, because that really is catching them when they're still really open, I think, to that kind of change and influence.
Absolutely.
You know, kids in a learning stage are different than adults, because we've stopped learning, being forced-fed learning things every day.
Yeah, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could even model ourselves off of what Alice Waters is doing with the Edible Schoolyard Project mm-hmm. in Berkeley? And mm-hmm. I think with, you know, what Harry's doing at Sage School, and the community school is hoping to build a greenhouse there, and then they've got a kitchen in the works, and kind of bringing that into mm-hmm. a learning kitchen.
I have a friend in Long Beach who started an edible school program at her children's elementary school, and it's so successful that she's now going to other schools in Southern California and helping them start too.
Good for her. I hope she keeps doing that.
I know.
It's so important.
It's terrific, yeah.
And again, it's, you know, we were talking at the beginning of our conversation about how much has changed mm-hmm. in the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's we actually are very fortunate, and thanks to, you know, celebrities like Jamie Oliver and Michael Pollan and Michelle Obama for bringing all of this. I mean, and she's got the White House garden, you know. So all of this, I think we are on a good, we have a good momentum going. And so if we can just keep with that momentum, I think we can make this valley, which
Absolutely.
Is already a fantastic place, even better.
Yeah. Let's take a quick break on that note. And I'm going to play a little tune how do we want to promo this tune?
Okay, so
it's called Choose My Plate, a lyrical rendition. And it apparently is Duke University nursing students.
Yes, and being in the nutrition education field, I will tell you that I was cheering so loudly when the food pyramid finally went down.
Oh, yeah,
right. So again,
pyramid.
Thanks to Michelle Obama. And what I thought was fantastic when the new MyPlate came out is that so much excitement came from every corner of the country, and everybody made it fun.
And yeah, and let's just give a little background on the plate. So where the pyramid used to have this crazy setup of what you should be eating, and everybody followed it like to the T, and look what happened. We became an obese nation. The plate is split more in quarters. So instead of saying you should have more meat, and, you know, it's saying you should have an equal amount of these things, right? Would you?
Yeah, I mean, there's some really basic messages. And to be able to have it be a visual that kids can understand is so important. So the basic messages are half your plate should be fruits and vegetables. That's the mm-hmm. first thing. Mm-hmm. And then the other two quarters are made up with lean protein and whole grains. And then they, of course, have the dairy off to the side because the mm-hmm. USDA is involved with that. And so I'm by no way saying that my plate is perfect. It's a huge improvement. Mm-hmm. My favorite plate is actually created by Harvard. And it's called Harvard's Healthy Plate, and mm-hmm. anyone can just Google it.
Harvard's Healthy Plate.
And what they did is they just replaced the milk with water, and they added some healthy oils, and they changed the proportions a little bit mm-hmm. and added a couple of caveats and some extra words. So it's a little bit more complex.
Well, I'd like to interject that if you're going to drink milk, drink raw milk.
Yes.
It's full of nutrients. Full of nutrients. So if you can drink milk, choose raw, and always choose organic.
And of course, with my plate, you know, it was a balancing act. And the fact that Michelle Obama was able to get the challenges or to overcome the challenges and get this new plate passed, I mean, mm-hmm. it was a heroic effort on her part. And so it's simple, it's easy to explain. And like I said, so much fun education came out of the woodwork. And so I just thought this song was a good representation of that fun.
Let's listen to this song. Okay, just one second. Why don't I play we'll do this, and we'll be right back here on For a Cause. You're listening to KDPI.
This programming on KDPI is brought to you in part by Mountain Rides. Don't be caught in construction traffic. Take the Mountain Rides bus. Relax in comfort. Mountain Rides buses make it so easy for you to sit back and do what you want to do. Let Mountain Rides pay for the gas. Get your bus passes at Albertsons, Guffey's, Main Street Market, the Stinker Store, Splash and Dash, the Haley Chamber, your participating employer, or Mountain Rides website, www.mountainrides.org, or call 208-788-RIDE.
Okay, I'm going to get this song on right now. It's called Choose My Plate. Having a little technical difficulties on getting this song to play. So I will continue to work on it, and hopefully just a little later we'll try and get it on. Let me continue with this other Joe Satriani song instead.
Grains, and on the side some dairy I can make my own plate. Oh,
Okay, after a little confusion, we got that great song called Choose My Plate. And how adorable was that? It was Christy Grady and Lizzie Napier. And they are, the melody was born this way from Lady Gaga, was like what it was based on.
It's a catchy little tune there.
It is, but that is so great. I mean, there were some things we were talking about while it was going on that we kind of don't agree with, but it's such a catchy way of getting the point across about, you know, choosing your foods based on color. Color and freshness and locality, and you know, I always add in, you know, organic as much as you can. So some of the things they were saying, like low-fat cheese and low-fat yogurt, we totally disagree on.
It's controversial, and I think that, you know, in being in the nutrition education field, you have to look at everything as baby steps. So you were talking about the nursing students that stop at McDonald's, and actually, you know, the registered dietitian.
No, they weren't even nursing students. Oh. My daughter, the nursing student, was with older nurses who'd been around for years who stopped at McDonald's for breakfast and went to another fast food at lunch while they were doing a whole day of flu shots. And my daughter, who's a nursing student, was just horrified that they didn't know more about nutrition.
Yeah, because they're healthcare workers and they need to be obviously holistically thinking about the health of their patients. But again, back to the whole baby step idea. I mean, when Nurture was founded, we kind of said, okay, let's just get people out of the fast food restaurants. Okay, let's get them cooking. Once you have them cooking, let's get them using these Nurture foods, you know, that are economical and nutritious. And then you can start to add in more and more. And so, again, it's baby steps. That's how change is usually made.
You know, Catherine, I think nutrition is a fascinating subject because you have to be you have to know your anatomy really well. You have to understand how the digestion works system and your hormones and all organs, because everything is affected by what you eat. So you're not learning just like this low-fat yogurt is not quite as good as that full-fat yogurt because you actually need fat. You're learning why you need fat and what your body does when it has fat versus what it does when it has low fat, which is kicks a whole different chemical reaction in.
It's interesting that my plate doesn't have healthy fats on it. I mean, I do think that that's one of the big errors in the, and who am I to judge?
Protein, and I think you could choose protein with the understanding that it's going to have some healthy fat involved in it.
And Harvard's Healthy Plate, I love it. They do have that little olive oil bottle on the side. Yeah. So again, you can Google Harvard's Healthy Plate, and that gives, I think, just a little bit more detail. It gives a little bit more advice. For example, unfortunately for Idaho, the potatoes are not considered, according to Harvard, a vegetable. And that's really probably because of the way that they're prepared in most cases across the country. I mean, how can you call tater tots or French fries your vegetable serving? So I appreciate that idea of saying, nope, we don't count that.
Yeah, and potatoes are an interesting thing, especially being in Idaho. We have a thing, you know, potatoes are us. Potatoes are really hard to digest. So while if you ate them in a really pure form, like a new potato, for instance, versus a baked potato slathered in sour cream, which is not such a great thing. If you had new potatoes, which you roasted, you know, with a little olive oil and salt and pepper and rosemary, now that's pretty divine.
Well, and there's a great recipe. Actually, I was talking about Juliette Britton, who came up with our nutrition education program for kids. She came up with the idea of putting baked potatoes in the slow cooker. And you can actually just put some olive oil on them and then wrap them in parchment paper or foil and put them in the slow cooker and just leave them there all day on low. And by the end of the night, you will have this beautiful potato bar. And so, of course, you put all your veggies out and make it very colorful. And kids love that because they love choice.
Right. All right. What's next for Nurture?
So I will direct everybody to our website because we try to keep our programs up on the website, and it is www.nurtureyourfamily.org. This year we are doing programs through the WOW Students and WOW Projects, which is...
That's a great organization, what they do, WOW.
I love it. And actually, I'll tell you about one of the programs. We've got six WOW projects going on, and I'm so proud to say that all of our projects were chosen really quickly. So they filled right up. And what we wanted to do is we wanted to use the WOW project as a way to communicate our collaborative and sharing spirit. And so anything that we get from the WOW project, we're actually going to split mm-hmm. with another organization of the student's choice. So at Alturas, they're going to split the proceeds with Swiftshire Ranch. And at Community School 5th grade, they're going to split it with the Animal Shelter of the Wood River Valley. And I'll just tell you, so the idea is that we want to promote the idea that healthy nutrition is important for all living creatures, from humans to plants and everybody in between. And so we have to think about what we're talking about, what Clementine eats, her dog, and that he's a really fussy eater and he likes healthy foods. She's a very fussy eater because she's used to healthy foods. So we're going to be teaching the kids how they can make good choices for themselves, but also how to read ingredients lists. And then we're going to look at what's in regular dog food. Hey. And we're working with the Wood River Animal Shelter to work on some healthy recipes that the kids are going to prepare for the dogs and then bring them to the shelter. And it's going to be just a very inspiring and wonderful day when we can deliver the biscuits. And then we'll give half of our WOW proceeds to the shelter. So lots of cool things going
on. Catherine, it's been so nice to have you here. You know, these discussions go on, and they can and they will. And that's the beauty of it, because Catherine's going to have her own show starting January 22nd, I believe 22nd. We'll still have to nail that one down. And it will be nutrition for children specifically. So this is going to be a lot of fun. I hope you'll join us here on KDPI. Thanks for being here.